live from Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl from BFF Keon. Keon, how was your week?
Hello, Car. My week was great. I went outside one time, and that's pretty much all I did. But I had a beer on the pedestrian walk bridge over there.
Really? You drink a beer by yourself?
That's pretty much what I did.
What day was this? Was it when I was gone?
Yeah, it's when no one was here. I didn't have like the human background noise of all of you here, so I needed to go somewhere else for it.
That's crazy. Topher's joining us today, it looks like. Are you going to join us today?
Maybe.
Oh, he said maybe. Or he just came to grab his bag.
Yeah, which is fine.
He said, unless something spicy comes up.
How was your week? You were gone.
Yeah, I was gone all week. I was with Christopher from Open Agents, trying to help him raise, doing all that at the Vegas conference. And then, I had a good time. Saw a lot of people. It was amazing. It was really cool to see some old friends. I threw e-cash in Evan's face. It was awesome.
Did you gamble?
Jokingly, I did that to him, but.
Oh.
Okay. Did I gamble? Yeah. No.
You didn't play like one game of blackjack?
No, actually, believe it or not, I had no. I think the only thing I did like sinful was probably like drink every night. And I overate a lot of steak on beef steak day, but that was about it. I had a really great conversation with Matt Hill. Like, it was one of the most based conversations I ever had about Start Dying and all the stuff. So that was cool. I saw Lynn. So I saw Lynn there. The other Lynn. Saw her there. That was cool. Yeah, just a lot of friends catching up. I saw one Stacker News fan. Hey. Came up to me at TabConf.
They're out there.
They're out there. He was the only one.
Did he have a hat?
No. Did not have a hat. Okay, he's like, I love the show. I was like, cool. It's like you're one of like 50 people that watch it.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
How was Vegas in general? How did you like
the city? I didn't like it very much. I mean, I'm a Texas boy, you know, so I didn't like there's a lot of things I didn't like about it. The people were really nice there. The women are really, really seductive over there, like so much so where it's like kind of weird. What else? The food was very bad. I didn't find, I was telling Ovi, I was like, dude, all I see is just like fried food, bread, more fried food. It's just gross, dude. There's like no tacos there. I didn't see any good sushi there. I was very disappointed by the food. And that's because we went to a couple of really good restaurants. For me and my diet, it didn't do anything for me.
I'm sure there's some good sushi there.
I had some sushi.
Where did you go?
It just wasn't as good as you would have, like, even in Austin.
Where did you name? What was the name of the place you went to? Do you remember? Was it on the? It was on
the
strip?
Venetian. It was inside the Venetian.
It was inside the Venetian. Okay.
We had a lot of expensive dinners, and it was.
But still,
it just wasn't. I think. And then I had a stop in Denver, and oh man, that was even more terrible food there. I've come to realize everywhere is terrible food, except for like Texas.
It might just be hard to find the good food spots when you're just visiting.
It's really hard because I really like simple food. I just noticed it's like really hard to do really simple food, like just like two or three ingredients. I mean, Topher, did you find a place anywhere in Vegas that you had like you could say you had like a really good decent meal?
There was a sushi place that was
really good. Oh, what was it?
Sombro.
Okay, apparently I should have tried.
Car just said he didn't like them.
I didn't see any good sushi, but I couldn't even see.
It was like a weird sushi.
Brazilian, that place?
Yeah, Japanese
Brazilian.
It was like a weird.
Cool.
Maybe I should have gone there instead. Oh, that does look pretty good, actually.
What do they serve that's Brazilian? I can't be serving like feijoada and sushi. They make things with like pinto beans.
Well, so they had like some really good tostadas.
Okay.
So tostadas these are, yeah, see, these aren't, see, I would have gone, I would have totally been down for this, dude.
Maybe they have like a picanha plate or something.
Yeah.
They have chili relleno.
Yeah, but is he, like, that's what I'm trying to say is, like, even these rolls, like, it's just all rice. I don't see any, like, sashimi or, yeah. Which I think is fine. I just think I'm just spoiled with, like, Texas cuisine, I think.
Well, it's not like Texas is known for its sushi.
People really like to hate on Texas's or Austin's cuisine, but, I mean, it's not New York or L.A., but it's pretty darn good for Texas.
Deep fried roll, bro.
Anyways, if you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We cover the top five stories. Top three stories every week here on Stacker.News. So much going on this week on Stacker.News. Keon, did you see a lot of stories that you were surprised to see covering the conference?
Did I see any that were surprised?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, you're in luck because we're going to cover a lot of stuff that was talked about at the conference.
Okay.
I knew you were going to fall for that trap right when I said it.
Every trap I fall into. I'm a trap rat. That's what they call me on the streets.
Here, let me fix this real quick. Sorry. Now we're going to jump into the number three top story this week. It is why companies throw away. Sorry, using two screen stackers. Why companies throw away. Oh, wait, throw money at FOSS. ! Exclamation point. This is from 09, what does that say? F04A199 or something. 10 comments, 11,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Pavlenex wrote an article on X about why companies give money to open source and why it's not like charity or it's not a donation. And instead should be viewed as an investment. So kind of arguing about open source contributions as an investment. It looks like it was pretty AI assisted, at least in the writing part. But well, that helps us kind of browse it quickly. One of the reasons why you might want to fund open source is that you can be part of the upstream decision making. That's the first one he leads with. So if you're funding an open source project, you have a more direct relationship with the maintainers. You can converse with them about changes before they even hit production. So you're not surprised by anything that happens, and you maybe can provide input and feedback way earlier in the like supply chain. As one of the reasons, the second reason he gave was that the talent pipeline. You get access to the talent pipeline when you're funding open source, because a lot of people who contribute to open source are quite passionate developers usually, and that's kind of what you want to hire for, is people who really care about the craft and the good that it does. And so by being connected to those people via a donation or contribution, you get access to those people. And it does select from a more diverse pool, I would say, than, you know, a LinkedIn job, you know, query or whatever they call that. Another reason is that you get access to like a wider R&D base. Like if you are making a valuable FOSS contribution or have a project that you're maintaining, you can be quite speculative internally and develop a team that kind of tries to speculate about features or improvements to the product, but that's expensive. You kind of have to hire for every, and like all of that feedback and research has to happen internally. So you have to kind of like cook the whole thing yourself, versus if you're doing this in an open source way, it's more like a potluck, and you can kind of, and a lot of people kind of just bring their own contributions to it. And I would say you can scale research a lot better if you're doing it publicly and in the open like that and sharing more. And then the fourth reason that he gives is that when you're paying people to do open source work, it's operationally more convenient than if you're like hiring an employee. Like the legal burden of hiring an employee, especially an international one, is quite high. And so you can give an international grantee money pretty conveniently, is his argument. I'd say there's other, you know, there's probably more to it than that. I think, you know, another reason, especially if you're contributing, we've seen a few people argue that one of the reasons to give to Bitcoin nonprofits that fund development is that you, you can maybe not just learn about developments earlier, but kind of shape them earlier. If your business perhaps needs a has a certain need of a open source Bitcoin, open source project generally, you can you have a lot more say. You have skin in the game. People respect your opinion more and are more willing to listen. People have incentive to listen to you. So it's I think more interactive than he makes on that first point, but that is pretty good. And I think Foss is great.
How much how much contributions have you given to Foss, Keon?
Well, Stacker News is entirely open source, so that's one. And then we have a bounty program that we pay out for doing issues on Stacker News's repo. And I think to date we've given out over 20 million sats. It's been a long time since I've done the tally. Probably significantly more than 20 million sats at this point. Over 60 people. And then I also am like a GitHub sponsor of a few of our dependencies. That is my current contribution to Foss. How about you? How do you feel about your contributions?
I've given a lot to Foss personally. Just through like manual work. I know I contribute to Stacker News's GitHub sponsor. Volunteered this past weekend at TapConf. So yeah, always doing what I can for and Bitcoin Builders Club. Yeah, I do that once a month for 4 hours.
Your pleb book?
Oh yeah, pleb book's another one. So like yeah, just a lot. I would say like I probably donate more in my time and my effort than I do with actual physical dollars or sats, but I am definitely contributing. Cool stuff. Love to see it. Let's jump into the number two top story this week. It's Libra de Satoshi is a MARA Foundation finalist. Vote closes in 24 hours. This is from CAA8. Three comments, 13,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so I guess MARA's nonprofit arm. MARA's like a big miner. They have a nonprofit underneath them, and they are donating money to, I think it had three people in it, was my memory of it, that were contending for $100,000 donation. And it was 256 Foundation, Libra de Satoshi, and I think, I forget the other group. So Libra de Satoshi was promoting their own participation in it, hoping to get the votes and win 100K. Looks like it went to 256 Foundation. But Libra de Satoshi is a Bitcoin nonprofit operating, I believe, out of somewhere in South America. I'm trying to figure out. But they run Bitcoin for Open Source, which has funded a number of developers. On LNDK, on Bitcoin Core, they gave a grant to someone working on Bitcoin Core, another grant to someone working on BDK and silent payments, another grant for White Noise, two grants for White Noise. It might be based in Spain. I think it's South America. They participated in the Florinopolis, Nifty's Florinopolis Bitcoin +++ thing, and did like an intensive workshop there. They have like classes, and I think they are funded by B-Trust, Jack Dorsey's $1 billion Bitcoin fund that I think targets like non-Western countries primarily, like trying to get people onto Bitcoin and Bitcoin development there. But they did not win MARA's prize, sadly, but I hope they aren't mad about it. I'm sure they aren't, but I think it's pretty cool to see more Bitcoin communities out there. Have you talked to these guys before? I know you talked to a lot of people in
Ventium, which is Lucas's
in Brazil.
Yeah, and he's the only one I actively talk to.
I think I heard of Libri De Satoshi, but I had not interacted with them much. So cool to hear about them, and looks like they have residences and stuff like that. So they're kind of a full service Bitcoin nonprofit.
Yeah, I think I've just come to realize, like, especially in like the Latin American areas, there's just a lot of pockets of communities that are Bitcoiners that just don't come out. If that makes any sense. Like, they're not trying to self-promote themselves or anything like that. They're just fine with their own little smaller circle economy without including the greater world. That's what I've noticed just the past 5 years I've been doing it.
So yeah,
there's actually more. You tend to see more and more Bitcoiners come online in Latin America. And it's just like they're just not saying they're on. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know how to explain that, but
well, I think there's like a somewhat of a border caused by language that keeps us from accessing. I assume there are probably some really big influencers in like Spanish-speaking Bitcoin that we are completely unaware of, because I don't speak Spanish and I can't connect as easily. But I'd be really curious about, like, is there an Odell and a Marty Bent in of Latin America, you know?
Yep. I think that's all we got for that one. Let's jump into the number one top story this week. It's 14 years of, what does that say? A building with Bitcoin plus 35 ideas worth exploring. Keon, 18,000 sats. What's this? Never heard of it.
Oh, but you did, because you told me you talked to this guy. I was hoping you would have more to say about it than I did. I would, but it looks like someone made Bitcoin products at XYZ, which catalogs, I think, a decade or more worth of hackathon projects and the various states that they are currently in, and then uses that, I think, funnels that to an LLM to suggest where there may be gaps and things that people can work on in subsequent hackathons. And it's a pretty cool little thing. I think it's a very early version of it. I think they suggested in the comment thread that they know it's like not perfect and they kind of want to especially make the ideas part a little better. But it seems pretty exhaustive. There were a lot of stuff in here that I hadn't heard about, just like kind of stray things that people had worked on. But I know that you interacted with this dude.
Yeah, I saw him at TapConf and he came up to me and said he was a big fan of everything that we do here at Plub Lab. Has said that he took a lot of inspiration from Plub Lab. I was like, oh, that's awesome, man. Because I always get that all the time. But he was saying that he's working on this project. He's from Montreal area and they're like a group of Bitcoiners, but they're trying to kind of build their own version of a Plub Lab over there. And like, you know, one of the places they're starting is like trying to see what has been built, all those sort of things. And
do they know our other friend from Montreal?
I don't think so. I think when I asked them, I don't think they do. But anyway, yeah. So basically all of this is just kind of work they've kind of put together in this canonical archive, basically pulling from a lot of these hackathons from over the years. Basically the pitch was like, what would you do? Like, what would you actually go and fix or try to contribute to in Bitcoin if you knew what was out there first? And I'm surprised no one has ever done this before, especially with AI. Now it's a lot more easier. But yeah, he actually launched it, like soft launched it on Sunday. And then, he pushed it to get in front of everybody. And it was kind of cool to see. And super bullish on the guy. His name's Art. I think he's down here at the bottom. You can click on it. He's a really cool Bitcoiner, really into helping, you know, builders and such get to where they want to be. So I expect to see big things coming out of what they're doing at some point. But yeah, working full time, doing everything, you know, the right way, I think, and doing this on a spare time, trying to build his own community. So you love to see it.
Cool.
Yeah. So if you're out there, support him, follow him on Twitter. I think he has all his is Link's here.
Is he on a go-kart in that picture of him?
I don't know. He's really nice Let's guy, see. Though. He was super nice, super pleasant to talk to.
Oh, he's Canadian. That's how they are,
yeah.
dude.
So, yeah, like they're
in the water.
He had like a good group of guys with him, so really cool dudes. Yeah, check it out. Bitcoinproducts.xyz. If you want to contribute, I'm sure you can. Just go to their GitHub, which is here at the bottom, and you can start contributing to it. Yeah, there it goes. See all that, Keon? Look at all that. It's a lot of work. 5 stars. There you go. We're going to jump into now Wumble's Picks. Wumble's Picks every week. Every week we have this, Keon. How can you miss this?
I forgot.
This is the most important segment.
My other email was open. The most important segment
that's quickly taken over Bitcoin's. I don't know how I was going
to say. I'm going to try to find it here.
Wumble's Picks. Wumble. I see you every week dropping these alpha posts. This is Wumble's Pick this week. It's prediction markets are all zero sum grift. This is from Matt Levine, Money Stuff from Dan. 22 comments, 1157 cents. Keon, hope you're ready in 5 seconds. What's this?
Unfortunately, I missed a Wumbo's pick this week. And I don't know. Is it a zero sum grift? I don't know. I think the stock market, I think a lot of people categorize. So I haven't read this post from Dan either. But we tend to enjoy Matt Levine's work, and Den shares it a lot.
Well, Matt Levine, let's just start with Matt Levine. Always has like his normal kind of like. I feel like him and Kayla Scantlin are like very much similar in how they're thinking about like the exemplification of the world, basically, where it's just like everybody wants it fast, cheap, and fiat. Right? It's just like boom, 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 and they just kind of lump everything into the same category, and they blame everything on Trump. That's kind of what I've gotten from those two guys. But Keon, tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, I don't know how you would associate the two. Matt Levine usually comes in with a take that bursts everyone's bubble. He did that with treasury companies, I think, quite effectively, and he's proven right there. I think similarly, I think he's making an argument here that most people would probably agree with if they thought about it as deeply as he did. And I'm not really sure. I haven't really thought too much about whether they're zero sum, but I would guess there are externalities to prediction markets that are positive sum. So the if people can look to prediction markets to reason about the world better, I would guess that is positive. That is not wash.
The angle that they always come at is like they are actually like the people behind the scenes actually. That are actually betting on these prediction markets are the ones who are in control of said prediction. That's where they kind of put in this kind of like conspiracy theory insert here, because they see certain things take off right before they take off. So that's where it kind of gets lost for me a little bit when it comes to these type of things or these type of articles. It's not supposed to be scandalous, but it feels a little bit scandalous where they're just like implying that there's an invisible hand, like, you know, when it comes to war and all that kind of stuff. But that's kind of where I see it. Like, I see like these types of people do these same types of articles, and it's just after a while it just gets a little bit kind of like, you know, okay, this again, gotcha. I don't know.
I haven't read the content of this article, and I'm not sure if he was saying that Polymarket is like an inside job or something, but
he's not saying it's inside job. They're saying that there's people that are doing that are betting on these prediction markets that are the people in charge of whatever they're betting on. So like are we going to invade Iran? Yes or no? Well, they're implying that the people that are making these bets are the people in charge of invading Iran. That's why these articles get a little weird for me.
Oh, I see. They're insider trading. They point to, right. they suggest that insider trading happens. Yeah. I think most of us accept that insider trading happens. And you see that quite a lot especially when there's like, I think around a lot of the Iran stuff, there was like, you know, 24 hours before someone places a huge bet before an announcement or whatever. And they're like, clearly that's insider trading. Who is it? We don't know.
That's where I'm saying, like, for me, when I hear that, it's just like, is it really insider trading? It's just people out of the curve.
Yeah, it's coincidence. Could be coincidence. Could be someone good at predicting, which is what the whole thing is designed for. But I don't know if that's what Matt Levine is saying. So that might be an independent thing. So I don't want to lump Matt Levine in with
some of the stuff. No, he's literally saying, is it all zero sum grift?
Yeah, but zero sum does and grift don't imply that there is an insider trading. That is like that's a specific kind of grift, insider trading. I'm not sure which type of grift he is suggesting here. It looked like in one of the screenshots that you pulled up, it was mostly about bots, that some of the biggest winners on these markets are bots. And a lot of them and the majority of people lose. Sounds an awful lot like the stock market to me. So I would guess that most of the things you could say against prediction market, I mean, it's basically what a stock market is a prediction market about future values of companies. So most of the things that you could say about a prediction market, you could say about a stock market adverse vice versa. But I think there is a prediction market aims at, there is no like company underlying, and there is no management. There is no SEC involved in a prediction market. And then measurement, I think, is not really regulated. It tends to be decided by the platform or whoever designed the market. Anyway, are they a zero-sum grift? No. I would say that I would say maybe no. But having not read Matt Levine's argument, who's clearly thought about it a lot more than me.
So in the article, he says prediction markets are not like stocks. In stocks, retail can still win over time because companies create value and markets are tied to economic growth. In prediction markets, every dollar contract pays a dollar to the winner. So the money mostly comes from other traders' losses. That makes it closer to gambling or zero sum trading than investing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's accurate. We need a prediction market expert to come on Sacker News AMA.
Well, a lot of this, I mean,
both. Why haven't you guys gotten Mega Dreamer to do an AMA yet? I feel like he's like the perfect person.
He might have done one already.
I feel like he's like the perfect person to speak on this.
Yeah. I know Gray Ruby and Undisciplined, they do a lot of prediction market stuff with them. I think Coins Reporter too, a lot of sports prediction market stuff. So
so he had a question. Do you agree that prediction markets are zero sum grifts, Keon?
I said
you know my answer.
I said I don't. I don't think so. I think you might be able to, like, if you're choosing between one or the, like, if the basis is the stock market, I can see his point, where relative to a stock market is perhaps more zero sum. I think neither is actually.
I think zero he's just sum. Mad because he's not getting involved in the bot market. I think that's kind of what I'm saying. So I'm saying no, it is not zero sum grift. That's what I say.
Okay, well, what's the answer?
I just said
we don't know.
No, I said he asked the question. Do you agree?
I know. Yeah, I know. But you had said it like you were on a game show, like a Jeopardy, like it was Jeopardy, and you were like, "I answer."
I got it. Is not. I got to make this segment.
It is not a zero sum grift.
Wumble's picks. Tune in next time as we dive into the wonderful world of Wumble's picks.
We need like sparkles and stuff.
Yeah, we should do that.
The wonderful world of Wumble's picks.
The wonderful world of Wumble's picks. All right, cool. Let's jump into Keon's. Well, actually, you know what? Before, let's get into. Should we go in the hard stuff? Yeah, let's go into Keon's picks. I feel like yours is probably the least. Yeah. So
Keon had what? Say it, Carr.
Not as antagonizing.
Not as antagonizing.
Yeah, Keon had a post said sharing Bitcoin backbone roadmap, basic testing and testing the basics. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Antoine Riard continues on their path toward developing Bitcoin backbone, which is another Bitcoin protocol implementation. And I think in this release, they tend to be, the cadence is monthly. So I'm actually banking on Antoine releasing a working Bitcoin implementation at some point, and it has a really interesting architecture. But in this release in particular, I think he developed some testing plans and some things that he plans to test, and some basic testing of the functionality that he already has, and that was kind of his current.
He should fix his website, by the way.
His current update, yeah. It's not. It's clearly not. Clearly a back end systems engineer type guy.
Center the dev.
But if you go to bitcoinbackbone.org, it's a little bit more clean. The project was started. We've covered it a few times on the podcast. It has libbitcoin kernel as the consensus engine in it. And then all the network components are developed in Rust and C. And it seems to be using a sort of an isolated process, like multi-process architecture, that reminds me kind of like quite modular, kind of like BDK and LDK. Antoine comes from, I believe, working quite a bit on BDK at one point, and I think LDK as well.
Looks like they have a mailing list too, by the way.
Yeah, they have a little mailing list going on. They started mid-2025, and then as of April 2026, now the node can process blocks and transactions in basic ways, which is pretty awesome. It means he's gotten pretty far pretty fast. And then he hopes to have a raw test-only functional full node by the end of the year. But which he says, you know, maybe not, because shit happens.
Especially at the top comment, I said, excited to see that your continued development plans for the rest of the year. I looked at some of your previous posts about Bitcoin Backbone, but I'm still a little fuzzy on the particular advantage or the approach you are talking. Have you written about this somewhere, or I just missed it? Your website says, it says, good question. Not super familiar with Hornet or Floresta, a bit more with Libitcoin. Anyway, it's free to correct me if I'm wrong. And then he goes into a long explanation. What did he ultimately say here? What was the, he doesn't want to overpromise, it looks like.
Oh, no. He was mostly saying that, Scoresby asked him about other Bitcoin implementations and both Hornet and Floresta. And I think Hornet isn't really much of an implementation yet. They're trying to spec out the consensus code and like formally verify it. And that doesn't seem what Antoine is doing. Antoine is doing something kind of almost like production ready is kind of advocating for, which is an alternative implementation and basing it on existing like hardened code, which is a Bitcoin core consensus code, but redeveloping everything else except the consensus code the way they want it. And I think they'll probably produce a working implementation, and it will be divergent and have different governance and structure, which is pretty cool. I mean, I think Antoine for a long time tried to continue contributing within the clicks within Bitcoin that do a lot of our open source development, and I think butted heads with a lot of people, and so they're creating their own, hopefully their own click.
Let's jump into your next post that you had. It was, let's see here, the lever, hold on, that second article on Bitcoin Core. What is this, Gio?
Yeah, the lever is the second. Oh, they're planning to do four articles, I guess. So HODLNOT released an article, I think, a month ago about Bitcoin Core, which we covered on this podcast. I think that one was titled "The Capture." They claim that Bitcoin Core was captured by, I guess, people who disagree, who don't really understand Bitcoin's principles or don't align with, I think, the core, like Bitcoin's culture entirely. And then this one, they like detail a few incidents that happened in Bitcoin Core, specifically around like citing IRC chats, GitHub comments and PRs and back and forth, and basically trying to pull forward all of the past drama and make it a little more visible, and I think dramatize it. They've done a pretty good job of making things quite dramatic, in my opinion, which it probably was, and maybe is best felt that way. I don't really know. But I think it's, you know, if you're, I don't really know all of the background here, so I'm taking it with a grain of salt. And you should too, unless you're willing to go in and do the research yourself. But it is obviously everything that he links to is real, or everything you can prove is real is real. And HODLNOT, I think, is pretty clear about his position on these things. Like he thinks that Bitcoin Core is, and like the clicks around Bitcoin Core are sort of rotten. That is kind of his position. So he's writing from that position, and you should take that into account when you're reading it.
I don't know. At this point, it just feels like you're beating a dead horse already. Like I don't get it anymore at this point. I feel like the point's already been made. Like, what is this now?
I think the vibe has been set. I don't think anyone has like listed it out very clearly. There's been a lot of things said on podcasts.
It just feels a little bit like, okay, I think everybody gets your point. This is how I'm seeing it. I have no skin in this bite or whatever you want to say. But yeah, it just feels like it's all been said. It's all been out there. Like at this point now, it's just like dunking on them and style points. That's what it feels like to me at this point. But
I think he's just trying to back up some of the things that he said in like shorter form other places.
He did that like a month ago. At this point now, it's just like, it just feels like, oh, I already yeah, it's just yeah.
I think we all have different requirements for evidence, and I think the post that he shared a month ago was higher vibes and less evidence, and this one I think has quite a bit.
But
more,
I think if his whole thing was to get the point across, it's already across the goal line.
I think for certain people it is. I think for certain people where, you know, a strong vibe, a strong like a sense of strong consensus.
I disagree. I think there comes a certain point where if you already said something, if people have heard it already and they understand and they get it, after a certain point, it becomes a little bit kind of like childish, in my opinion. I mean, there's a certain way to disclose things. You're talking about people's lives here, potentially, are affected by this. And after a certain point, now it just feels like a general attack. And I have no, like I said, have no skin in this. But I'm just telling you how it's perceived as a person who's just watching this from the sidelines. Anyways.
Okay. I think that's a fine opinion to hold. I see it as him trying to articulate for himself the reasons why he believes the things that he does and share them with people. And I think it's a good exercise. If you hold a strong opinion on something, the way that he holds a strong opinion on Bitcoin Core, to go through all of the evidence and reason very clearly in your own writing about it. And so I don't know what his intentions are. Maybe he is being kind of childish. I don't know.
Let's jump into the next one. The next one was mine. BIS vulnerability being exploited, trading halted. Did you take a look at this, Keon?
No.
I guess this came out like about, what is it, 11 hours ago. But it was... Sudden Whip Vapor said that BIS V1 has experienced an exploit in its trade protocol that allowed an attacker to drain a portion of available offers. The impact is limited to offers that were actively taken by the attacker. Funds held in users' BIS Bitcoin wallets are not affected. They said as an immediate migration, emergency mechanism was activated to disable trading by setting the required trader version to 2, version that does not exist. This effectively prevents the attacker from continuing the exploit. Yeah, and then everybody else is here commenting. I go to you, Keon. What do you think this says about where we're at when it comes to getting Bitcoin in a private way? Do you think this is something that we're gonna start seeing more of, or do you think this is just a one-off?
I don't think it's necessarily a one-off. I think vulnerabilities occur all the time in all kinds of software. I think that LLMs have made it easier to find exploits in software. So an attacker who's maybe has lower motivation, there's like more attackers that have low motivation than attackers that have high motivation. And if you can find vulnerabilities with lower motivation now that LLMs exist, more vulnerabilities are going to be found. And I think that's likely what we'll see is more vulnerabilities be found in things. But hopefully people who are developing BISC and these other protocols and implementations are using LLMs to their advantage to secure their software as much as attackers are using it to attack it.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that because I know a lot of people that use BISC probably listen to this podcast. The next one.
We have all of it. We have 50 people. You said earlier we have 50 people.
There's a lot of people that are into privacy that listen to this podcast, as far as I know. The next one is Vegas 2026. This is from 0x Bitcoiner, the DOJ is developing developer exemptions. So over the course of this week, there was a acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche addressing the audience at the Bitcoin Vegas Industry Day, and Blanche as well as FBI Director Kash Patel were invited on a panel hosted by Coinbase's Chief Legal Officer Paul Gruhl to discuss CODA speech ending the war on Bitcoin. Is it Lola? Yeah, Lola goes pretty in depth on what exactly was said. If you might remember, just over a year ago, Trump's DOJ has sought and continues to seek to lock 3 non-custodial software developers away for half of a century combined. But developers need to fear not, Blanche proudly proclaimed, as long as they don't know that their software is being used for illicit activity. I'm not sure if you were paying attention to this all week, but we saw a lot of people there at the conference that were holding signs up. One of them being one of the wives of said developer that she's talking about here. And then the DOJ will still prosecute developers. This is according to Lola. She says, we're no longer going to regulate by prosecuting, Blanche said yesterday, which means quite simply that if you are a developer, if you are part of a platform, whether it's in the United States or elsewhere, we are not going to take your liberty away and prosecute you when there's not even a developed regulation that points clearly to a law you're violating or some maxim you're violating. He goes on to continue, says the basic principle is this. If you are developing software, if you are a coder, you're part of that process and you are not the third party user and you are not helping and knowing that the third party is using what you developed to commit crimes, you're not going to be investigated, not going to be charged. Woo, doggy. Keon, what say you?
Yes, yeah, so I somehow happened upon this, the stream of this, and I watched it while it was streamed live or whatever. And I was, they were saying lots of things that sounded quite good, but as Lola points out in detail, they're kind of vague and not very clear. I think also Zach Shapiro was on a panel afterward where he discussed some of the things they said. And the main thing that stuck out to Zach was that Cash Patel and the other guy, or I think the other guy, the SEC guy in particular, he said something like, so long as they don't know that they're helping criminals. And his point was like, well, that's kind of the whole problem is like Gmail knows that people are committing crimes using Gmail. Chat apps know that all car manufacturers know that people smuggle drugs in them. And so what is the legal liability for those people? And there aren't regulations about that. And so I think you just can't trust what a politician says ever, especially when they're on in front of a crowd or on a camera, they're going to say whatever they think people want to hear. But the reality is, like, the way they're acting is they are still prosecuting or regulating by prosecution because the laws aren't clear, and they do appear to have a different standard for Bitcoin developers relative to developers of communication tools that have nothing to do with money. So,
yeah, I thought it was a great article, well written, really covered the gist of everything. Top stackers. Let's look what they had here. Top Stacker was from Darthcoin. He says, it's still stunning to see people thinking that Samurai devs were jailed for developing a Bitcoin app. I find this false narrative so blatantly wrong among many Bitcoiners, and they do not want to hear anything else. I do not defend also the position of the government, but opposite. And then he goes on to curse and say Darth things. But I feel like there's a lot of different sides just by looking at this one post from Darth. You go in a little further, and then there's back and forth. Obviously, people don't feel entirely like Darth because there's people like Scoresby that jump in and Chris 21 million. So check it out. It's the talk of the week here on Stacker News, I think. I think this is probably the biggest news item this week, in my opinion, that's directly affecting developers. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I don't think it. I would guess it's not really directly affecting developers at all because, again, it's just two guys on a conference date saying stuff that it appears that we still don't know what they actually believe and what they're actually going to do. And even their words are ambiguous enough that it appears that nothing has changed. So I don't know what – it's not like they didn't make a decision. They're not like we acquit Roman Storm or whatever. Or they didn't say they're going to free Samurai developers. They said – man, we're good. And the other party was bad, and the other guys who ran the government were bad, and we're good, and we're going to do it different. And then they just kind of don't do anything about the current status of things. So as far as I can tell, it's like a nothing burger, although it is an interesting like drama point.
I think it's worth mentioning that they were also in a remote location. They weren't actually at the conference.
I think because they claimed it was because of the communications dinner where there was that like shooter. Someone fired a gun at the presidential communication doc gala or whatever. There was someone who in the lobby who fired a gun, and then I think they all had to go into lockdown, or that's what they claimed. They also, I don't know. Cash Patel always looks hungover to me. So Maybe they just had a wild night partying too.
That's everything from that one. That was a big news item this week. Those were my two posts. Topher left. We had his post. Should we cover this or not?
We can if you want. I don't know much about it.
I don't know anything about it either, but red button or blue button stackers. Here it goes. So this is the post. I don't know, but apparently it's supposed to be like a thing. Everyone in the world has to take a private vote by pressing a red or blue button. If more than 50% of people press the blue button, everyone survives. If less than 50% of people press the blue button, only people who press the red button survive. Which button would you press? I don't understand any of this. Can you explain it? Like I'm five or something. Like what is this?
Yeah. So it's basically something like if you press the blue button, you're like a good person and you want everyone to survive. But the risk is if you press the blue button, you're that person who wants everyone to survive. If more people push the red button, you die.
Yeah, but I don't. Why am I pushing a button? And like, what's the whole premise?
It's a thought experiment. It's purely for the thoughts.
What is it? I don't understand. Like,
it's all for the thoughts.
So is it red button people die, blue button people don't die? Is that just basically that's it? Or
yeah, red button. If you press the red button, it's possible that blue people die.
So this is like the end of Dark Knight, basically, where the Joker has like these two ships push a button. Like this is what that is. Do you not see Dark Knight?
This is more like a prisoner's dilemma. If you remember the prisoner's dilemma, do you rat on your friend when you're held in separate confession rooms, or do you stay silent and hope that your friend stays silent? It's structured more like that.
So Mr. Beast also posted this on his Twitter. He said, "Everyone on Earth takes a private vote by pressing a red or a blue button. If more than 50% press the blue button, everyone survives." If less than 50% people press the blue button. See, this is where they lose me here. Why is he saying the blue button again? If less than 50% of people press the blue button,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
It does.
So if more than 50% of people press the blue button, everyone survives. If less, why not just say if people press the red button? Like this is where this line right here just throws me off.
I see what you're saying.
Like it should be worded different. It's confusing.
It's not, well, it's like if more than, so yeah, so it should be if more than 50% of people press the red button, people who press the blue button die.
No, it should be two different sentences. This doesn't make any sense.
No, I know, but I was trying to explain how that second sentence, how you might understand that second sentence better is if more than 50% of people press the red button,
yeah,
the people who press the blue button die. That's how that second sentence should be written.
So, oh, okay.
But I think they were trying to phrase it in a way where it didn't make it obvious that the people who press the red button are savages.
So what happens here in this scenario? Because people press the blue button.
Thankfully, we all survive. Because if the red button won, then all those blue people would have died. So
this is also like that movie, The Box. I don't know if you ever see that movie, The Box, where you basically get handed $1 million. Or you get money or something, but you have to push a button and somebody dies. Did you ever see that movie? It was called The Box.
I might have seen it.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of
movies. The guy who made Donnie Darko.
Ah. I probably saw it then.
Yeah. I. What would you do? What do you put? But I mean, obviously, you're in the answer.
I press red. I have to be honest. I press red because you're kind of making a statement about what you think other people will do. And the risk is that you press the blue button wanting to do good by everyone. But then there's more people who press the red button and you die. And so pressing the red button ensures that you survive. And that's what I did. So I ensured my own survival by pressing the red button.
That's terrible. Or not.
And I hope that everyone else pressed the red button because that's the right thing to do. If we all press the red button, everyone survives.
Yeah.
So that's what I was.
What I would do is not push any button and walk away from the stupid question. That's what I would do. Even if it was reality, even if it was like, Carl, you have to. I was like, nope, I'm not pushing any button.
Well, then they'll pick for you.
I'm not the one pushing the button. Somebody else is.
Well,
I just don't play stupid games like that. Market. So Topher said there was just like a lot of people that saying,
oh, it's been a total meme. It's been a phenom. It's like Open Claw, but a question, but like a poll.
Nobody needs to die. That's where, dude, get out of the crusher. I just want to kill. Yeah, it's like the trolley problem. Remember this?
Yeah, it's not though.
But we already know what David Bailey's pushing. He's pushing the red button like Yukion.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll have a treasury company someday.
Cool. You heard it here first.
Will be my ticker symbol.
Yeah, that's funny. Anyways, there's some pretty funny stuff in there. Yeah. That was Topher's pick. He was supposed to stay and talk about it because I think he had more.
Oh, we didn't talk about the strike. The other thing was the strike announcement. Remember that?
Oh, wait. Hang on. Let me get into all the AI stuff and then we can bring up that stuff. Oh,
that's right.
Unless you want to get into that stuff.
Oh, I don't know. Just feels someone. I just
want to say. Let me pull it up. Hang on. Because Stacker's like, or this is for Wumble, really. Did it make the top 10 this week or no?
I think it should be in there somewhere.
There you go. Let me, don't say anything yet because it's for a good clip.
We have to visualize here. It.
Where is it at?
Gosh, Tether Plans merger. Tether Plans.
Oh, there it goes right there. Yeah. All right, Kia, this Tether Plans merger between 21 Strike and Electron. What's this?
Yeah, so the treasury company, or not a treasury, everything's not a treasury company now, but the not a treasury company, XXI, is going to acquire Strike, and I think some other, I think the mining company that Tether at one point cooperated with Swan on and is being sued by Swan over now. But that's mostly the news. I remember you predicting this back when, I think it was the week that we discussed XXI. You were like,
did I say it on the show?
I hope you did. So there's a receipt somewhere, but I remember you saying that and I was like, oh yeah, that makes a bunch of sense. I didn't, cause it didn't occur to me for whatever reason. Everyone else, it's like, says it's obvious, but it didn't occur to me. Cause that just seems so obviously weird, but that appears to be what's going on. It's going to be a treasury company that is perhaps operating somewhat like, I guess private equity, sort of Berkshire Hathaway, maybe, where they just acquire a bunch of Bitcoin companies that are at some stage of development that aren't really maybe public in their own right. And just house them and then finance a bunch of fiat to buy Bitcoin and stuff. And that's what it looks like it's going to be.
I mean, I feel like the thing that we're seeing here, just from my point of view, is like, there's really, I mean, I guess who was the one that went public this year? Was it Fold?
I think Fold did go
public. Did they go public? Yeah.
They went public through a SPAC a few years ago.
Yeah, has there been an actual company that has gone public yet or no? Besides these treasury companies.
Besides the treasury companies.
I don't follow it too much, but I would imagine it does. There doesn't seem a pathway for Bitcoin companies to get to the open markets. And I think I don't know anything, by the way, so this is just more me speculating and just kind of hypothecating on what I think this is. I could be wrong as soon as I hear a podcast telling me otherwise. But for right now, I think the thing that I'm seeing is just there's just not a pathway for some of these companies to get to the open market. And, you know, obviously Tether is the buyer of last resort for most companies. And they seem to be wanting to go in with Jack on this. I don't know all the specifics around this, but it does seem to me like it's purposeful. It does seem like there's a way to, you know, use Strike's continuing revenue generating business. You attach that to some mining, and then you throw some good debt behind it. And then at some point, you got yourself another block stream, possibly. I don't know. But it starts resembling a whole different sort of beast. So I think this is all good. I think a lot of people will get paid, whether through like a security or something. I think Blockchain Boog actually said that, right, in the thing? Yeah, he was saying that he expects to get paid. So... yeah, I think we're going to probably see more of this. I think we'll see more type of these kind of PE plays. I think this is just kind of where the space is moving. And I did see a comment in here somewhere, and they were basically saying that if you're a Bitcoin company, you should just already be stacking Bitcoin. That shouldn't be like the highlight reel, basically, for your company. But yeah, I don't know which comment it was, but that's kind of my take on it. I don't know if that's sufficient enough for people.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I thought mostly your prediction of it I found good.
I'm usually right,
Keon. And interesting. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I think it's why it stood out to me is because not the opposite is true, but you know, like I like it. I like to shout you out.
I think more from my, I can't wait to see what Swan's going to do next. I mean, for me, like, cause this is an ongoing story. Like I've seen this move. So curious to see what Corey's going to do. I don't know anything, but I would imagine it's going to be something cool.
Yeah. You
know, there's always a balance to these things. It's just funny how it plays out. It's a weird time, man, in Bitcoin. Weird time. It's exciting times, too, at the same time. It's good to just be a pleb watching from the sidelines.
Yeah, it's just kind of turning into everything else where it feels like it isn't really pleb. Plebs are just on the sidelines now. That's what it kind of feels like.
Where is the... Where's the thing I was just talking about? Oh, there it goes here. Let me see here if I can find it. Yeah, there it goes. Cool. I want to cover my stories this week. So Juan Galt published an article for Open Agents. So he timed this really perfectly, actually. So he timed that they raised money and Christopher David's beating of the drum of America needs an open source AI lab. And I thought it was a really in-depth article about what he's trying to accomplish. Just wanted to share this with the stackers. But shout out Juan Galt for getting this over the goal line because, I mean, there's not really a lot of people focused on trying to get, like, smaller companies that are at, like, the seed stage access to, like, mainstream news. Thought that was cool that Juan got it over there.
It is cool. Did you see Juan in Vegas? Was he there?
I didn't see him, but we were trying to get him to come up to the suite so we can like feed him and stuff and like hang out with him. But yeah. I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was nice, dude. I think the Venetian, gosh, dude, that's a nice place. It just has shitty food, but man, it was.
Is that where your suite was?
That's where the open agent suite
for
was.
For the open
It was cool group. Though.
Open Venetian.
Yeah.
Open suites.
Did you go last year to the conference or no?
I did go. I stayed in Trump's hotel.
That was so far away. Did you walk?
I would walk every day.
Oh wow, dude.
Yeah, I like walking. I'm a big walker. And my toilet at the Trump's hotel it wasn't gold, but it did have a telephone next to it.
Oh nice.
Which is kind of the same. So
pretty boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure that one. And then the other one I wanted to bring up was this one. The White House workshops plan to bring back Anthropic. So if you haven't been paying attention, we talked about this last week and we talked about it again. We talked about this like 2 weeks ago. Then we talked about it again last week. And so it looks like that behind the scenes, a draft executive action that's currently in the works could, among other steps related to the government's use of AI, give the administration a way to dial down the Anthropic fight. One source described the White House efforts as a way to save face and bring them back. Basically, it says that the White House and Anthropic have made up and they're going to be working together.
Hey.
Did you see that coming?
No, but I wonder what happened.
Mythos, probably.
Yeah. Does that mean that the White House conceded? And they were willing to.
I think they were trying to save face, but I think they had like, you know, it was like playing chess, and then they had one of this way, and then they had this one, and then the mythos came and had the queen.
All right,
ready for checkmate.
So Anthropic got enough leverage, and
I think it was just all about leverage. Hey. And then the other one was this one here. Let's see if we can pull this. Yeah, and then in the other news, Pentagon signs new military AI deals with NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Amazon. So basically, they're handing out these. Military contracts. They got some more deals reached. NVIDIA, Microsoft, Reflection, AI, Amazon Web Services. These are the same ones that are similar to SpaceX, OpenAI, and Google. So what do you think about this, Gian? Anthropic might be getting the same one, too.
I think all the predictions about AI eventually become like mostly being a weapon and there being like a global arms race in AI development. It seems to be coming true, and that eventually the governments will completely take possession of them for security reasons.
I think the sad thing I think about all this is like there's no American open source AI.
Hmm. No, well, I guess, okay, so Facebook stopped doing it. I think that is true. I wonder if that, I wonder if there is no, none of them, though. I'm not familiar enough with the space to say that there are none of them.
Yeah, I think there's
not
only,
a frontier model.
There's only, it's, which is very important because Chinese open source models have infiltrated a lot of different companies. So basically, China, communist state, has open sourced a ton of models. And they're infiltrating everywhere you see. I mean, you even have people in China got us. There you go. You see that?
Oh, man.
Boom. As soon as we say communism, freaking get cut. That's rare. We've never lost connection before. Communism. Chinese Communist Party are the only ones that have open source models out there, Keon.
Well, maybe that's because they're commies and they don't care about.
But there's no open source American like model, dude. That doesn't scare you?
I mean, there's not one that is competitive with other frontier models, or I think as good as the Chinese open source models. But we do. I'm pretty certain that we have like mid. We have pretty good mid open source models coming out of the United States, but not ones that aren't like competitive with frontier models.
Too late. We're all going to be using Anthropic and praising this guy.
What? Oh, I don't want to. Yeah, I turned on our own.
Anyways, just thought I'd share that one. The last one I want to bring up was like the most spicy one this week is OpenAI Sam Altman's stole a charity. This was from Financial Times. Did you see this?
I did see that. This is going down. I think the trial began this week, and Elon Musk was on the stand, I think, for like 4 days.
Did you read any of the, like, the...
I read a little bit of it, but it's all stuff that we've heard him say before.
This was pretty eye-opening to me. I didn't realize this. Where it goes, yeah, if Musk wins the four-week trial, it could unwind OpenAI's restructuring completed last October and jeopardize its ambitions for a $1 trillion initial public offering, generating potentially huge returns for investors. It could also force Altman and Brockman out of the company. That's crazy.
I would guess they're going to lose. I would guess Musk is going to lose, though. There's no way. I don't know. It's maybe kind of conspiratorial, but I think there are too many.
There's no scenario this happens, what you're saying.
I would guess not. I would guess at least, I don't believe that whatever conclusion they come to, whether Musk wins or not, OpenAI will restructure. The government's like too deep with them now. The private markets are too deep with them now. If they're going to be the first $1 trillion company, who doesn't want that more than Trump? You know, Trump probably really wants that. And of course, all their investors want that.
Yeah, he wants that under his watch.
Yeah, they're just too powerful now. I think it'll likely be a slap on the wrist regardless. So
the other thing that I thought was interesting here was, where is it at? Yeah, here it goes here. Internal emails were displayed in court, which show a proposed ownership structure for OpenAI with Musk taking a 55% stake, Keon, while Altman and Brockman and co-founder Aya were to receive 7.5%. The co-founders objected to this ownership split and refused to turn the keys of artificial intelligence over to one person. Musk said he participated in brainstorming sessions about the lab's future. He said he wanted a larger stake because he had provided the funding, but expected to be diluted over time. In the end, Musk donated $25 million and $12.5 million in rent out of the $1 billion he said he would contribute. Musk told the court he was not opposed to a for-profit entity that would provide funding to the nonprofit, but it is not okay, he says, for a for-profit to take the vast majority of a value away from the nonprofit. Yeah, and then Musk finally said, he goes, it matters who is in charge of AI, and fundamentally, do you trust them? He told the jury. And if you have somebody who is not trustworthy in charge of AI, I think that is dangerous to the whole world. Keon, you've said this before about Sama.
What did I say?
That he's not trustworthy.
Yeah, I don't think he is trustworthy. Did you read that New Yorker piece?
Yeah, I was going to bring it up right now.
Yeah, that New Yorker piece, I think, you know, it might not be factually perfect or something. I think that is what Paul Graham, who cited in the article, says. This is The Guardian. But the New Yorker piece I'm talking about was like a 16-month investigative journalism piece that the New Yorker did that was published, I think, a week or two ago. And it goes pretty extensively into like Emoti leaving OpenAI, Ilya leaving OpenAI, the whole saga around Altman getting fired, and just like sort of a character reveal on Sam Altman. Anyway, but yeah, I don't trust him.
Yeah. This could be bigger than the OJ trial, I think.
No.
I think
for a normal person, no. For us,
they haven't even brought up all the murder stuff around OpenAI yet.
Oh, they're not. That's not going to come up.
You don't think so?
No.
That could be his the glove don't fit, quit type of.
They're not even able to talk about like AI safety. They're going to keep it well scoped to just this nonprofit issue.
I don't know.
That's the way the courts work.
How much? So there's 4 weeks left. So we're going to cover this every week. So yeah, I would say that murders are going to come out.
If Elon has evidence that Sam Altman participated in the murders, I'm sure they will come out, but
we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm taking the over on that.
Yeah, we should join a grimy, what do they call it?
A grimy market. Prediction. We should market. Do a Polymarket thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I bet it is on Polymarket already.
Is it really?
Yeah, I bet that was. That's a big.
I guess it is a non zero sum grift. Sorry, Wumble. And then we go back to, that's all the AI stuff. It's all Keon stuff. It's all my stuff. It's all October stuff. And the last one was Pleb Poet, new zine, please, Lorenz. Do you see this one?
No, she posted it briefly before the podcast. It looks like
there's gasoline being poured. Or wait, what is that?
No, I think it's fire in a hat.
Oh, it looks like natty gas almost.
But what's behind? Is that? I think it's like servers. We know that Pleb Poet is against the machine. She's raging against machines all the time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, for her whole life.
That's funny.
And so that's probably what that's about.
Oh, wow. Did not know that. Anyways, check it out. There's a new zine this week. Let's see if we can get a preview of it. Looks like it was uploaded 2 hours ago. Let's see here. Yeah, there's some flowers and stuff. It's like Bubba Gump's shipping boat over there. Yeah. Oh, wow. Look at these. She's doing graphs now. Love to see it. Cool. Keon? There you go.
That's the zine.
That's the zine this week. What else we got? No meta. Let's jump into the Tampa Cowboys, baby. It was funny when I did meet that one stacker this week. He did not say anything about the Cowboys. So there's that.
Oh, it's probably because it goes without being said how amazing this segment is. I get to watch me wear a hat, and then we get to look at all these stackers wearing hats, and it's a big, it's an it's important a big day yeah, it's a big of thing. The week for everyone in Bitcoin.
Yep. There you go. Looks like nothing's really changed. Oh, Machiavelli coming up. Looks like.
Oh, it's a surprise.
There it goes right there. And a mic. These two have changed. That's interesting. Somebody should do a Polymarket on this here.
Oh,
see how that plays out. See this. I think this, for me personally, every week when I look at this, is like the 11th. 11 through the 15, I feel like is like the spots where things are happening. Things are, it's kind of like the Mario Kart things where people are getting hit by ducks and stuff.
Oh,
you know, this is kind of where that's at. So I feel like all this area is like, this is the shifting area.
Yeah.
And then once you get down here, this is like where people are making moves, you know, like Scoresby has 333 days. Like, yeah, that's not going to happen, but maybe this could happen. Right. Like, boom, right here. One of these guys gets sick.
Oh yeah. They could drop out.
They could drop out really fast.
At any moment.
But really. Here though, this is where things are getting really tight. Here.
Oh yeah. See these guys aren't fully committed yet.
They're rounding the corner.
Yeah.
We all lost Toshi's leading the way. Anyways, try to make it interesting. Peter Todd's coming up, though. Look at that. Out of nowhere.
Hey-o.
Out of nowhere from the back row, Peter Todd. Oh, yeah. Crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah. Very wild. Very, very wild and sensational.
Pretty good stuff. I don't think
we should get.
Who's the last one? Oh, there I am. How many days do I got? Oh, no. Just a new one. Yeah, it's tough.
Dang, bro.
Still don't know how to do a cowboy. Let's see it. The last one was E78. You're the winner. You get zapped. Oh, hang on. Let me move this out of the way. And you get zapped, buddy. Zap them.
Someone.
That's the last one. Let them know that.
Maybe. If they have a wallet attached.
People care. But yeah.
No, they don't have a wallet attached.
That's all of that stuff. Let's jump into the comments. The comments, Keon.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to see these. I don't know if I've seen them yet.
YouTube comments still from the same one.
Graphene OS. Dude, our best video ever. Should just remove all of our other videos and just sell that video. Just
sell this one video.
What about UpPhone?
What is UpPhone? I don't know what that is.
It's probably like an alternative Android phone.
Oh.
I would guess.
I see Google eventually taking away all of Graphene OS coders developers. Wow. Why would he say that for?
Where would he take... Like maybe it means hire them away, like poach them. I don't know. I would guess most of the Graphene OS developers are pretty ideological.
Yeah.
And they don't want to work for Google. They're against Google.
Yeah.
They're not against them, but they think they're not doing the right thing most of the time.
Yeah. They're like,
corrupt gently in the way that every public company is corrupt gently.
We got the Fountain Boost. This one says, Coop already owes me a hat.
I do owe him a hat.
Wow. Do you really owe him a hat?
I owe him, the official cowboy hat we were wearing.
Why would you send it to him for?
He didn't want us to send it to him.
So where are you going to send it?
We have it on hold in a special vault that we have here at Brazos Place in the deep. We're in the basement currently, but in the deep, deep basement.
Can't you just ship it to like an Amazon locker or something?
No, but I think you still have to, like, your docs as part of that chain, like to get an Amazon locker.
You should have told me. I would have just dropped it off, like, in, because they're in, I'm not going to his area anytime soon. So
I think on this one's the kind of guy who might live in like Antarctica, maybe. So it's hard to get a package out there. That might be why.
Anyways, if you find your way to Austin, come pick it up here.
I think it's a plan.
Yeah. That'd be weird to meet him in person, though.
Why?
Because I only know him as a name, so just like Darth Coin, it'd be kind of weird to meet him in person. Blockchain Boog, it wasn't weird because I feel like I got the sense of Blockchain Boog before I met him. If that makes any sense. And he kind of slowly said, I was there. You know, he kind of like said, Car, I was already there. Like, we met him many, many times before, but he never told us. So I felt like that was the right way to like.
I think we met him in Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like he did it the right way where I had met him already, but he didn't tell me it was Blockchain Boog. And then. So it wasn't weird when we did meet. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
What do you call that? That's sort of like a slowly.
So it's like a gentle.
It's like a gentle way of like.
Gradual introduction.
Gradual introduction of who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I much prefer that way. Undisciplined, if you could do that, just maybe cruise by Austin. Don't say you're undisciplined, just so we can meet each other. And then after a couple more times. Of us meeting each other, then you say, oh, by the way, I'm undisciplined. I'd be like, oh, wow.
Yeah, meeting us is going to take you 5 years. And just, you have to do a real...
Yeah, do a slow rollout.
Slow rollout.
Because if you just came to me and said, I'm undisciplined, I'd be like, whoa, it's too much. My world is crashing. Anyways.
Wow.
That's pretty much it. Keon, was there any other stuff you wanted to cover?
I don't think so. I think that
pretty
much it. I mean, I wasn't anywhere fun this week. I wasn't at the conference. I don't have any inside baseball. I know I heard that. One thing I'm looking forward to look into is LDK server. I know that Ben Carman released that, which I think they've been working on since they joined Spiral.
That should be interesting. It was good. It was good. Overall, it was good. I mean, a lot of stuff I was just doing for work. I saw some, you know, the friends, like all our friends that we see. Mm-hmm. Beefsteak was amazing. That was probably the best thing I ate all week. It was awesome. Dude, try H beef, dude. Turns out, man. Have you ever had dry aged?
Have I had dry aged beef? Yes, of course. I've actually dry aged my own beef before.
Okay. That was my first time ever actually having it. I never had it before.
Also had wet aged. Most beef is wet aged. I mean, because it comes in like a package that way. And I think most beef is also dry aged, but very for 2 weeks. And then it's wet aged after being packaged. But you can both wet age and dry age at home in the right setup.
The dry age was really good. And then he made sweetbreads too, which I haven't had since I was like really young. Because it's like a gland from the cow. But it's like, it's really good on the grill. And it's
lymph nodes,
it,
right?
It was, I don't know what it is, but it was like, it was amazing. It was like in a corn tortilla. That actually might have been the best thing I've had in Vegas was the sweetbreads. I wish I had like a whole plate of it because that wouldn't really. But
sweetbreads are brains, right?
No, they're glands. I believe they're glands.
They are like lymph nodes, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looks like we got a visitor coming in. Probably should end this.
Oh, it's maybe Topher.
Cool stuff. Keon, we can do this weekend.
Yeah, well, I think we're gonna go watch.
Oh yeah,
that anti-Bitcoin guy.
Is it in here? Did you post?
I didn't post it. But
what's the name of it?
Ben McKenzie, right?
Is it Ben McKenzie?
Isn't that his name?
I don't know. Let's see. Oh no, that's not it.
I'll look it up in Slack because that's where we were talking about going.
Here, you can share your screen.
But we're gonna. It's not. Well, let me. Where did I post it? Hackerspace?
Might have.
Or PubLab.
I don't know. One of them.
Well, I gotta find it.
Anyway, there's this movie that's getting created. Here, I found it. There's this movie that's getting created by this guy. Here comes. What was that? Some dude came to the door, then like walked away.
Might be a Amazon.
No, he just like came over here. I think the Chinese Communist Party's here. Anyways, so this one is this guy. So this guy made a documentary called Gotham. What is it called?
I don't know. I was still looking for it, but
here it goes. No, that's not it.
You were being lied to, or something like that.
Yeah. So dumb.
But he's in Austin doing.
He's from Austin.
He's from Austin, and he's doing a screening in Austin at like the Film Society or whatever. And he's doing a Q&A before at 8 p.m. or 7:30 p.m. today. And I somehow noticed this. I don't know why. I think it was a coincidence. I like looked up the movie because I was curious about watching it.
Really, you were curious about it?
Yeah, I was gonna, because I actually like the criticisms of Bitcoin almost more than I like the rah-rah stuff in Bitcoin. So I was interested in watching.
Oh, it's this one right here. It's this one, Snickers. So yeah. This guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Here you go. Everyone is lying to you for money. So we're going to watch this tonight, I think, or maybe I'll just watch it. Did Topher leave?
No, I'm going to go.
You're going to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
Okay. And 30 minutes before there's a Q&A, and
he's going to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Carr is planning on roasting him.
No, but it just doesn't make any sense. Cause like I saw a talk that he had with John Stewart, and John Stewart knew more about Bitcoin than he did. And then that's where I kind of realized, I'm like, this guy's just lumping crypto into Bitcoin. And, he's just, this one feels like he's being paid. Honestly, this feels like a paid kind of thing from somebody. I don't know who it is, but,
someone probably financed the movie.
His wife is, what's her name, from Deadpool, which is kind of surprising.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's married to her?
Yeah, dude. Crazy, right?
Oh.
She was great, and maybe she can just talk. No one wants to hear this guy talk. Anyways.
She won't be there.
Yeah, she won't be there. Anyways, yeah, it should be fun. Keon, are you going to say anything? You're probably not going to say anything here, too.
I don't know. I don't know enough about... I know he wrote a book. So
you know a lot about Bitcoin.
I know some stuff about Bitcoin, but I haven't read his book. I'm more curious about what his actual position is. Does he think that...
He literally has said that he thinks he's like saving everybody from getting scammed. That's what he said.
Yeah, I know what I think I see his role as, but I'm curious what he thinks of Bitcoin. Does he believe that Bitcoin is like centrally controlled and everyone's kind of lying about it, or it's like a mass hallucination? Or does he think that...
He thinks it's a Ponzi scheme.
Okay, but does he think it's actually decentralized and that there's like, but no, there's no value in a shared ledger?
He thinks decentralization is dumb. He thinks that doesn't actually exist.
It
was funny because John Stewart was explaining to him, like, don't you think Bitcoin's important for certain areas of the world who are, you know? And he's just like, no.
Okay, so I don't know.
He's full on the other side, like, complete, like, just. I don't know.
I want to figure out the nuances of what I get.
There are no nuances.
I get that. Okay, but
he has an interview his interview with SBF, and he blames, like, he's the reason. I don't know. It's just dumb.
Yeah, so I think there's a possibility that he just thinks there's no value, and even if he views Bitcoin as decentralized, there's no value in having a shared there's like no value in a shared decentralized ledger that no one controls, which is a valid position to hold, I think, of all the positions that one could possibly hold. Or he just views that as like not actually decentralized, or even if it has,
that's not important. You need to watch a John Stewart interview, because Like, I felt like John Stewart actually, and that's because I'm not a fan of John Stewart, but I feel like he actually did like a really proper interview.
Okay, I'll watch that before I go.
Because like even John Stewart had to point out there's a difference though between Bitcoin and crypto, and he's like, nah, not really. I'm just like, what? It's just sad, dude. He's like, yeah, there's like 21 million cap, but it's not important. It's just like, what, dude? So all these properties and make it a great. Anyways,
okay, I'll watch the interview. Maybe I can come up with a question based on that once I understand his position.
Anyway, so we're gonna go there tonight. We'll see. See how it
should be fun. We should be hanging out with a bunch of no coiners, dude. That'll be great. Huh? We should maybe hand out some eCash. Do you have any of those?
How dare you, like Greta Thunberg? How dare you?
Yeah, which, that's maybe what I ask him. I'm like, okay, you don't like Bitcoin, but have you heard of eCash?
I can think. Never mind.